Little Prudy's Sister Susie. Preface. Here is a story about the oldest of the three little Parlin girls, Sister Susie, though so many things are always happening to Prudy that it is not possible to keep her out of the book. I hope my dear little friends will see how kind it was in God to send the slow winter and the long nights of pain to little Prudy. If trouble should come to us, let us grow gentle, and patient, and lovely. Little friends, be sure of one thing, our dear Father in heaven sends us something hard to bear only because he loves us. Chapter 1. Keeping Secrets. We might begin this story of Susie Parlin on a New Year's Day, only it is so hard to skip over Christmas. There is such a charm about Christmas. It makes you think at once of a fir tree shining with little candles and sparkling with toys, or of a droll Santa Claus with a pack full of presents, or of a waxen angel called the Christ Child. And it is just as well to date from the 25th of December, because, as Christ was born on Christmas Day, that is really the Happy New Year. For a long while the three little Parlin girls had been thinking and dreaming of presents. Susie's wise head was like a beehive, full of little plans and little fancies, which were flying about like bees, and buzzing in everybody's ears. But it may be as well to give you a short description of the Parlin family. Susie's eyes were of an evening blue, the very color of the sky in a summer night, good eyes, for they were as clear as a well which has the truth lying at the bottom of it. She was almost as nimble as a squirrel, and could face a northern snowstorm like an engineer. Her hair was dark brown, and as smooth and straight as pine needles, while Prudy's fair hair rippled like a brook running over pebbles. Prudy's face was sunny, and her mouth not much larger than a buttonhole. The youngest sister was named Alice, but the family usually called her Dottie, or Dottie Dimple, for she was about as round as a period, and had a cunning little dimple in each cheek. She had bright eyes, long curls, and a very short tongue, that is, she did not talk much. She was 2 years and a half old before she could be prevailed upon to say anything at all. Her father declared that Dottie thought there were people enough in the world to do the talking, and she would keep still, or perhaps she was tired of hearing Prudy say so much. However, she had a way of nodding her curly head, and shaking her plump little forefinger, so everybody knew very well what she meant. She had learned the use of signs from a little deaf and dumb boy of whom we shall hear more by and by, but all at once, when she was ready she began to talk with all her might, and soon made up for lost time. The other members of the family were only grown people, Mr. and Mrs. Parlin, the children's excellent parents, Mrs. Red, their kind Quaker grandmother, and the Irish servant girl, Nora. Just now Mrs. Margaret Parlin, their Aunt Madge, was visiting them, and the little girls felt quite easy about Christmas, for they gave it all up to her, and when they wanted to know how to spend their small stock of money, or how much this or the pretty toy would cost, Prudy always settled it by saying, "Let's go ask Auntie, she'll know, for she's been through the arithmetic." Prudy spoke these words with awe. She thought going through the arithmetic was next thing to going round the world. "Oh Auntie, I'm so glad you came," said Susie, "for I didn't see how I was ever going to finish my Christmas presents. I go to school, you know, and it takes me all the rest of the time to slide." The children were busy making wonderful things all secret, or they would have been secret if Prudy hadn't told. For one thing, she wondered very much what Susie could be doing with four pins stuck in a spool. She watched the nimble fingers as they passed the worsted thread over the pinheads, making stitches as fast as Susie could wink. "It looks like a tiny snake all stick through the hole in the spool," said Prudy, eager with curiosity. "If you ain't a going to speak, I don't know what I shall do, Susie Parlin." When poor Susie could not pretend any longer not to hear, she answered Prudy, half vexed, half laughing, "Oh, dear, I suppose you'll tease and tease till you find out. Won't you never say a word to anybody, never?" "Never in my world," replied the little one, with a solemn shake of her head. "Well, it's a lamp, Matt, for Auntie. It's going to be blue, and red, and all colors, and when it's done, Mother'll sew it into a round, and put fringe on, won't it be splendid? But remember, you promised not to tell." Now, the very next time Prudy sat in her auntie's lap she whispered in her ear, "You don't know what we're making for you, all secret, out of worsted, and I shan't tell." "Mittens?" said Aunt Madge, kissing Prudy's lips, which were pressed together over her sweet little secret like a pair of sugar tongs clenching a lump of sugar. "Mittens? No, indeed. Better in that. There'll be fringe all over it, it's in a round, it's to put something on, to put the lamp on." "Not a lamp, Matt, of course?" "Why, yes it is. Oh, there, now you've been and guessed all in a minute. Susie's gone and told. I didn't suppose she'd tell. I wouldn't for nothing in my world. Was it strange that Susie felt vexed when she found that her nice little surprise was all spoiled? Try to be patient, said Mrs. Parlin, gently. Remember how young and thoughtless your sister is. She never means any harm. Oh, but, Mama, replied Susie, she keeps me being patient all the whole time, and it's hard work. So Susie, in her vexation, said to Prudy, rather sternly, you little naughty thing, to go and tell when you promised not to. You're almost as bad as Dottie. What makes you act so? Why, Susie, said the child, looking up through her tears, have I acted? I didn't know I'd acted. If you loved me, you wouldn't look that way to me. You wrinkle up your face just like Nanny when she says she'll shake the naughty out of me, Miss Prudy. Then what could Susie do but forgive the sweet sister, who kissed her so coaxingly, and looked as innocent as a poor little kitty that has been stealing cream without knowing it is a sin? It was plain that it would not do to trust Prudy with secrets. Her brain could not hold them, any more than a sieve can hold water. So Mrs. Parlin took pity upon Susie, and allowed her and her cousin Florence Eastman to lock themselves into her chamber at certain hours, and work at their presents without interruption. While the little girls sat together busily employed with bookmarks and pincushions, the time flew very swiftly, and they were as happy as bees in a honeysuckle. Mrs. Parlin said she believed nothing less than Christmas presents would ever make Susie willing to use a needle and thread, for she disliked sewing, and declared she wished the man who made the needles had to swallow them all. The family were to celebrate Christmas evening, for Mr. Parlin was away, and might not reach home in season for Christmas Eve. For a wonder they were not to have a tree, but a Santa Claus, just for a change. Not a truly Santa Claus, that comes puffing down the chimney, explained Prudy, who knew very well it would be only Cousin Percy under a mask and white wig. Chapter 2. Before daylight. On Christmas morning, at 3 o'clock, there was a great bustle and pattering of little feet, and buzzing of little voices trying to speak in whispers. Susie and Prudy were awake and astir. Where do you suppose the stockings are? Buzzed Prudy, in a very loud whisper. Right by the bedpost, Prudy Parlin, and if you don't take care we'll wake everybody up. S.H. S.H. Mine's pinned on, said Prudy, and I've pricked my fingers. Oh dearie me. Well, of course you've waked them all now, exclaimed Susie, indignantly. I might have pricked my fingers to pieces, but I wouldn't have said a word. Mr. and Mrs. Parlin, who were in the next room, were wide awake by this time, but they said nothing, only listened to the whispers of the children, which grew fainter, being smothered and kept down by mouthfuls of candy, lozenges, and peanuts. The little girls longed for daybreak. The sun, however, seemed to be in no haste, and it was a long while before there was a peep of light. Susie and Prudy waited, wondering whether the sun would really forget to show his face, but all the while they waited they were eating candy, so it was neither dull nor lonely. As for closing their eyes again, they would have scorned the idea. It would be a pity indeed to fall asleep, and lose the pleasure of saying Merry Christmas to everybody. Nora, the Irish servant, had said she should be up very early to attend High Mass. They must certainly waylay her on the stairs. How astonished she would be, when she supposed they were both soundly asleep. Let me do it myself, said Susie. You stay here, Prudy, for you'll be sure to make a noise. I'll go on my tippy toes, pleaded Prudy, her mouth half filled with chocolate drops. So through their mother's room they stole softly, only throwing over one chair, and hitting Dottie's crib a little in their haste. Dottie made a sleepy sound of alarm, and Prudy could not help laughing, but only in her sleeve, that is, in her nighty sleeve, which she put up to her mouth to smother the noise. When they had reached the back stairs, Susie whispered, Oh, Nora is up and gone down. I hear her in the kitchen. S.H. S.H. Susie thought there was no time to be lost, and she would have rushed downstairs, two steps at a time, but her little sister was exactly in the way. Somebody has been and tugged my little chair up here, said Prudy, and I must tug it back again. So in the dim light the two children groped their way downstairs, Prudy going first with the chair. Oh. What a little snail. Hurry, can't you? Said Susie, impatiently, Nora'll be gone. What's the use of our waking up in the night if we can't say Merry Christmas to anybody? Well, ain't I a hurryin' now? Exclaimed Prudy, plunging forward and falling, chair and all, the whole length of the stairs. All the house was awake now, for Prudy screamed lustily. Grandma Eve called out from the passageway. Oh, Little Prudence, has thee broken thy neck? Mrs. Parlin rushed out, too frightened to speak, and Mr. Parlin ran downstairs, and took Prudy up in his arms. It was, you, did it, Susie Parlin, sobbed the child. I shouldn't, have, fell, if you, hadn't, have, screamed. The poor little girl spoke slowly and with difficulty, as if she dropped a bucket into her full heart, and drew up the words one at a time. Oh, mother, I know it was me, said Susie meekly, and I was careless, and it was all in the dark. I'm sure I hope Prudy'll forgive me. No, it wasn't you, neither, said Prudy, whose good humor was restored the moment Susie had made what she considered due confession. You never touched me, Susie. It was the chair, and I love you just as dearly as ever I did. Prudy lay on the sofa for some time, looking quite pale by the gaslight, while her mother rubbed her side, and the rest of the family stood looking at her with anxious faces. It was quite an important occasion for Prudy, who always liked to be the center of attraction. Oh, Mama, said she, closing her eyes languidly, when the room makes believe whirl round, does it truly whirl round? The truth was, she felt faint and dizzy, though only for a short time. I wish, said she, it had been somebody else that fell downstairs, and not me, for I didn't go down easy. The prongs of the chair pushed right into my side. But it did not appear that Prudy was much injured, after all. In a few minutes she was skipping about the room almost as nimbly as ever, only stopping to groan every now and then, when she happened to think of it. It is a wonder, said Mr. Parlin, that more children are not lamed for life by such accidents. I have often thought of it, said Aunt Madge. Some little ones seem to be making hairbreadth escapes almost every day of their lives. I believe Prudy would have been in her grave long ago, if it had not been for her guardian angel. The long-expected Christmas had come at last, and Prudy had stumbled into it, as she stumbled into everything else. But it is an ill wind which blows no good to anybody, and it so happened that in all this confusion Susie was able to wish a Merry Christmas to Nora, and to the whole family besides. When Mrs. Parlin found that the children were too thoroughly awake to go to sleep again that morning, she told them they might dress themselves in the parlor if they would keep as quiet as possible, and let the rest of the household take another nap. It all seemed very strange and delightful to the little girls. It was like another sort of life, this new arrangement of stealing about the house in the silent hours before daybreak. Susie thought she should like to sit up all night, and sleep all day, if the mayor would only hush the streets, it would be so odd. Oh, how dark the clouds are, said Prudy, peeping out of the window, it fogs so I can't see a single thing. Susie, I'm going to keep at watch of the sky. Don't you suppose, though, 'twill be Christmas all the same, if there's a snowstorm? There's been snow, said Susie, all in the night. Look down at the pavement. Don't you wish that was frosted cake? Oh, the snow came in the night, so not to wake us up, cried Prudy, clapping her hands, but it wouldn't have waked us, you know, even in the night, for it came so still. But why don't the clouds go off? She added, sadly. I don't know, replied Susie, perhaps they are waiting till the sun comes and smiles them away. Such happy children as these were, as they sat peeping out of the window at the dull gray sky. They did not know that a great mischief was begun that morning, a mischief which was no larger yet than a midge's wing. They were watching the clouds for a snowstorm, but they never dreamed of such things as clouds of trouble, which grow darker and darker, and which even the beautiful Christmas sun cannot smile away. Chapter 3. Susie's Christmas. It was bright and beautiful all day, and then, when no one could possibly wait any longer, it was Christmas evening. The coal glowed in the grate with a splendid blaze, all the gas burners were lighted, and so were everybody's eyes. If one had listened, one might have heard, from out of doors, a joyful tinkling of sleigh bells, yet I fancy nobody could have told whether the streets were still or noisy, or whether the sky had a moon in it or not, for nobody was quiet long enough to notice. But by and by, when the right time had come, the folding doors were opened, just like the two covers to a Christmas fairy book. Then, in a second, it was so still you might have heard a pin drop. Such a funny little old gentleman had arrived, his face alive with dimples, and smiles, and wrinkles. His cheeks were as red and round as winter apples, and where there wasn't a wrinkle there was a dimple, and no doubt there was a dimple in his chin maybe was double, only you couldn't tell, for it was hidden ever so deep under a beard as wide as a snowdrift. He walked along, tottering under the weight of a huge pack full of presents. He extended his small arms towards the audience most affectionately, and you could see that his antiquated coat sleeves were bristling with toys and glistening with ornaments. His eyes twinkled with fun, and his mouth, which seemed nearly worn out with laughing, grew bigger every minute. It took the dear old gentleman some time to clear his throat, but when he had found his voice, which at first was as fine as a knitting needle, and all of a tremble, he made the speech of Santa Claus. How do, my darlings? How do, all round? Bless your little hearts, how do you all do? Did they tell ye Santa wasn't a-comin', my dears? Did your grandpas and grandmas say, Humphrey? There isn't any such a person. My love to the good old people. I know they mean all right, but tell them they'll have to give it up now. Here Santa Claus made a low bow. Everybody laughed and clapped, but Prudy whispered, oh, don't he look old all over? What has he done with his teeth? Oh, dear, has anybody pulled him out? Yes, my dears, continued the old gentleman, encouraged by the applause, yes, my dears, here I am, as jolly as ever. But bless your sweet little hearts, I've had a terrible time getting here. The wind has been blowing me up as fierce as you please, and I've been shook round as if I wasn't of more account than a kernel of corn in a popper. Oh, oh, I've been ducked up to the chin in some awful deep snowdrifts, up there by the North Pole. This is the very first time the storms have come so heavy as to cover over the end of the North Pole. But this year they had to dig 3 days before they could find it. Oh, ho. I was a-wandering round all last night, a real shivery night, too. Got so broke up, there's nothing left of me but small pieces. Oh, hum. Such a time as I had in some of those chimneys, you haven't any idea. Why, if you'll believe me, over there in Iceland somebody forgot to clear out the chimney, and there I stuck fast, like a fishbone in your throat, couldn't be picked out, couldn't be swallowed. The funniest time that was. How I laughed. And then the children's mother woke up, and, oh, dear, said she, hear the wind sigh down the chimney. Only me, says I, and I've caught you napping this time. She helped me out, and when I had caught my breath, I climbed out the window, but, dearie me, I shouldn't wonder if that very woman went to sleep again, and thought it was all a dream. Hey-ho. That's the way they always treat poor Santa Claus nowadays. Here the children laughed, and Susie said, I guess he must have bumped his nose against the chimney, see what a hump. Oh, oh, don't you make sport of me, children. My nose is big, to be sure, but I'm going to keep it and make the best of it. If you love Santa as he loves you, you wouldn't mind the looks. I was going to change my coat and dickie. But then, thinks I, I'll come just as I am. I patted myself on the shoulder, and says I, Santa Claus, don't you fret if you are growing old. You may look a little dried up, but your heart isn't wrinkled, oh no. You see Father Adam and me was very near of an age, but somehow I never growed up. I always thought big folks did very well in their place, but for my part, give me the children. Hurrah for the children. Great clapping and laughing. I tell you, darlings. I haven't forgot a single one of you. My pockets are running over. I've been preparing presents for you ever since last fall, when the birds broke up housekeeping. Here's a tippet for the Prudy girl, and she may have it for nothing, and they are cheaper in that, if you take 'em by the quantity. I'm a walkin' bookcase. Why, I've brought stories and histories enough to set up a store. I've got more nuts than you can shake a hammer at, but I think there's more bark to 'em than there is bite. Oh, oh. I find I can't crack 'em with my teeth, as I used to 100 years ago. But my dear, sweet, cunning little hearers, I must be a-goin'. Queen Victoria, said she to me, said she, now, Santa, my love, do you hurry back to fill my children's stockings before the clock strikes 12. Queen Vic is an excellent woman, and is left a poor widow, so I can't disappoint her, poor soul. I must be a-goin'. Would like to hug and kiss you all round, but can't stop. Kisses his hand and bows, a Merry Christmas to you all, and a Happy New Year. So saying, Santa Claus suddenly disappeared at the hall door, dropping his heavy pack upon the table. In another minute the lively old gentleman was in the front parlor without any mask, and of course it was nobody but Cousin Percy with his face off. Then they all fell to work sorting out presents. Prudy seized her fur tippet, and put it on at once. Oh, how pretty I look, said she, just like a little cat. Ain't I cunning? But nobody could pause to attend to Prudy, though she chatted very fast, without commas or periods, and held up to view a large wax doll which would be alive if it could talk. They all had gifts as well as Prudy, and wished to talk rather than to listen. They asked questions without waiting for answers, and did not mind.